You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO at 102.7 FM.
Burns Bog in Delta is a unique ecosystem. It's the largest peat bog on the west coast of North America. It filters fresh water, keeps large amounts of carbon out of the atmosphere, and is home to numerous rare plant and wildlife species. And now the provincial government is going to run a highway through it. The last big piece of the Gateway Highway project is scheduled for construction this year. The South Fraser Perimeter Road will be a four-lane, 40-kilometer-long highway. It will connect the Lower Delta and Surrey and New Westminster. Stephen Rees is a former transportation economist and regional planner. He writes regularly on transportation issues at his blog, and he's joined me by phone this morning. Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning.
Why is the provincial government building this highway?
Well, it's part of a, as you said, gateway program. The theory behind it was that there would be so much container traffic coming this way from China that there would need to be many more trucks going between the Delta port and the various distribution terminals around the Lower Mainland. Because what tends to happen is that when the containers arrive from China, there aren't enough rubber ducks, you know, that you need to go to just one store. So what happens is that the containers get taken to the distribution depots run by the Hudson's Bay Company or Canadian Tire or something like that. The goods get taken out and then resorted into loads that fit the needs of each store. And then they get loaded, usually back onto trains. A truck takes them to one of the CN or CP terminals, and then they get taken across to central Canada. Now, the port has been expanding. They've been adding cranes and berths, because they thought this traffic was going to keep on growing the way that it did between 2004 and 2008. They sort of projected that forward in a straight line and said, oh, look, there's going to be lots more traffic coming this way into North America, and we can grab more of that market. And in order to do that, they felt that they needed to have better connections. So the plan is to both expand the railways, build a big container berth, build a big terminal on what's farmland down at Roberts Bank. Part of that, of course, was the deal with the Tawasin First Nation. And then the South Fraser Perimeter Road connects all that back up to the industrial lands that will be emerging along the line of the road. Basically, the South Fraser Perimeter Road has been predicated on the need to move trucks, but also because there has been a decline in the amount of industrial land available as we've been gradually converting port lands to other uses like condominiums and stuff like that. So they wanted to change the land use through North Delta and Surrey so that it will cease to be farmland or bog or whatever and will become more and more industrial commercial. And again, the argument was that in order for that to happen, you needed to have better connections.
How advanced is the South Perimeter Road at this stage?
Actually, not very. Because it's such poor quality land in terms of road construction, you have to put a lot of sand on it, and that has to sit there for a couple of years. It's called preload. Basically, you try and mimic what the weight of the highway will be once it's completed by putting down a bed of sand, and that gradually squashes the peat underneath it and squeezes out the water so that when you get round to actually constructing the road, the land underneath it is compressed and more stable. If you don't do that, what happens is the road sinks very rapidly and starts breaking up. So all that you're seeing at the moment is preload, and that then has to sit for a year or two until the soil stabilizes. And this is a typical method of construction in the Delta. For example, when they did the expansion of the airport and built a new runway, that preload had to sit there for 2 or 3 years before it had flattened the earth underneath it enough that they could then start paving it. So although it looks like a lot's happening, in fact, in terms of construction, very little has actually occurred yet and will not start occurring for another couple of years.
Well, what will the highway mean if it's built? What will that mean for the surrounding ecosystem?
Oh, the ecosystem's screwed. I mean, it's already damaged, not beyond repair, but we already know that, you know, bringing in lots of construction equipment, dividing up the critical habitats, endangered species like the red-backed vole and the sandhill cranes and so on are already being displaced, and they all have to go and find somewhere else. We also know that the hydrology of the bog is going to be affected. I mean, that's inevitable. And in fact, even the government's own reports that they wrote prior to the construction of the road. They gave themselves permission to do it, even though the environmental assessment said this is going to go through sensitive areas. But they felt, for whatever reasons, that the damage was somehow acceptable and worthwhile. And as you were saying before the program started, the other thing that happens is that you're interfering with the hydrology of the bog, meaning it starts to dry out. So what had been one of the best carbon capture sources in the Lower Mainland starts to become a carbon-producing area as the peat dries out, so it releases methane into the atmosphere, which is actually a much worse greenhouse gas than CO2. And oddly enough, the peat bog is actually one of the best known methods that we have of carbon capture and storage. That's something that most of the government's plans and the Government of Canada's plans keeps calling for to offset things like the extraction of oil from the tar sands, but we don't actually have a man-made technology that works anything like as well as the natural way in which peat bogs work. And the Burns Bog is the largest domed peat bog that we know of. We also know that it's extremely sensitive. It's already been interfered with quite a lot, so we have really good data on how quickly the bog dries out, how quickly the native species get chased away by invasive species, and how quickly you lose these very sensitive places where we depend on it for fresh air, but we also depend on it, the whole of the ecosystem depends on it in order for things like spawning salmon and all those other kinds of things that are interrelated. It's a web of life that we have decided fairly arbitrarily to interfere with without actually knowing if we can mitigate it. The plans call for all kinds of things to happen, some of which are and some of which aren't, but none of them are actually certain to replace what we already had.
Given that the economic projections for the kind of traffic that might use a perimeter road have slowed down, and and we've only got sort of like a sand bed on there, which could be reversible, do you think there is any chance of reversing this project at this point?
Well, first of all, you have to get a lot of people to admit that they were wrong. And that's a very difficult thing for a politician to do. It's almost impossible for the port to do, because the port only has one function in life. So the port's managers, their board, only sees the future in terms of its expansion. They're either expanding or they're contracting. And, of course, if they're contracting, their pay packets aren't getting bigger. So it will be very hard for them to say, oh, no, there isn't going to be an increase in traffic. We're not going to be successful. There's not going to be more trade here. But when you look at the broader patterns of what's happening in the world in general, first of all, there's loads of container ships now laid up and not working. The port business in the whole of the world is declining. And it's particularly bad along the west coast of North America, because that trade that China used to depend on with the United States has now been replaced by them selling things to themselves and to India. The Chinese economy is actually doing quite well because it's detaching itself from this dependence on Americans borrowing money from them and then using that to spend on consumer goods. The probability of that recurring seems to me to be unlikely. Most people are now recognizing that the economic model the United States was operating on for the last 8 years isn't a sustainable model. And that's what caused the great crash. Once the confidence in that model started fading, the financial arrangements that were set up literally collapsed and had to be propped up with government spending. Now, there isn't the capability of doing that indefinitely. Sooner or later, they're going to have to come up with a more sustainable economic model. And most people recognize that re-establishing manufacturing in North America rather than relying on imports is going to be one of the key points of a long-term recovery. Up to now, although they've managed to keep the banks going, they really haven't done much to promote employment, and they still have very high and growing unemployment, which means there's not enough money in their economy to fund people's consumption habits. And the other two things that are happening, coincidentally, one is that there is going to be a new Panama Canal. There's a deeper and wider channel being cut, and that's going to open in 2014, so that bigger ships can sail straight through and go to the East Coast, which is where most of these goods were going to. And the other thing that's happening is that the Arctic ice sheet is melting, and we will have an ice-free Arctic soon, which means that, again, there's a much shorter shipping route between Asia and Europe than there is now. So the idea that in the future there's going to be this need to transship goods in Vancouver so that they can be distributed across North America seems to be very unlikely. So when you look at, well, what is it that we ought to be doing, perhaps the port shouldn't be driving our own economic agenda. Perhaps we should be talking about, well, does the port actually offer us the best future? Because just simply taking containers off ships and putting them on trains doesn't add much in the way of value. And in order for our economy to become more sustainable in the future, we need to start looking at, well, how do we develop trades and businesses here which have the ability to create jobs and add value so that we can see a more sustainable economy in the Lower Mainland. Port activities here seem to be important, but when you actually analyse, well, what other things could you do, it turns out that we've only looked at one project and not many. So when you look at the South Fraser Perimeter Road or the Gateway against doing nothing, it looks like a good idea. But when you compare it with, well, what other alternative strategies might there be, what other kinds of things could we be doing, the government and the port had no intention of looking at those things. They simply had this one idea. Let's get on with this. Let's change the land use in North Delta and North Surrey. Let our friends make lots of money out of their land dealings, and that will get us re-elected, because they've typically got a very short time horizon for all of their plans, and the next election and the election beyond that is about all they're looking at. What I'm talking about is a longer-term projection that says the economy of North America needs to be restructured. That's not just us, it's the United States as well. And if the United States doesn't find a way of becoming less dependent on imports and less dependent on imported fossil fuels and starts, you know, it's called repatriation of the economy, bringing it back onshore rather than sending it abroad all the time, then there will not be adequate employment to provide them with a stable, growing economy.
Well, it's been very interesting talking with you about this morning, Stephen. Thanks for joining us.
Okay, you're very welcome.
Take care. I've been speaking with Stephen Rees. He's a former transportation economist and regional planner. Stephen Rees writes regularly on transportation issues at his blog, and you can find that blog at stephenrees.wordpress.com.